Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be continuing, if not completing, our ongoing series, Toxic Teeth, the controversy surrounding silver amalgam fillings. Mercury's effects on dentists and dental personnel has rarely been discussed in the mainstream media. I'd like to begin our program by examining some of that impact. The American Dental Association's obvious disregard for the suffering of people with amalgam-related illnesses is ironic, given the effect that amalgam has on the people who work with it every day, dentists and their staff. As early as 1987, a Swedish study conducted for the Occupational Health Program of the Harvard School of Public Health assessed whether suicide rates were higher among dentists than other college-educated professionals over the 10-year course of the study. Results showed an elevated standardized death ratio for male dentists compared to other male academics. The authors conclude that there is a need to investigate further the mental health consequences of mercury exposure among dentists. Related studies indicate that dentists may be more vulnerable to stress and consequent depression than members of other professions. For example, a study of dentists in private practice in South Africa found that 10% had severe suicidal ideation. A 1995 study documented the behavioral effects of low-level mercury exposure on dentists working with amalgam. Behavioral tests revealed significant urinary mercury dose effects for poor mental concentration, emotional lability, and a lot of sensory deprivation among the dentists who were exposed to mercury. The mean urinary concentration was 36 micrograms per liter, 700% higher than the mean level measured in a national sample of dentists. There was evidence of subtle preclinical changes in behavior associated with mercury exposure. One of the three urinary porphyrins altered by mercury exposure was significantly associated with deficits in digit span and simple reaction time. A follow-up cross-study found that long-term exposure to amalgams can make dentists' hands shaky, and this has a negative impact on the manual dexterity of dentists. Researchers found remarkable differences in psychomotor performance between the amalgam, meaning silver fillings, and the non-amalgam dentist. The most significant associations were found for the intentional hand steadiness test. The authors warned that this test result should be carefully considered by dental professionals who rely on manual dexterity in restorative dentistry. That would include any dentist who does fillings, root canals, or bridge work. In a later study, the authors were able to make subtle distinctions among the effects of mercury at different tissue concentrations. They comprehensively assessed fine manual speed, accuracy, and coordination, measures of particular relevance for dental professionals who work with handheld tools. The results revealed that subtle preclinical effects found at very low levels of mercury, urinary levels of less than 4 micrograms per liter, exposure appear on a continuum with far more severe clinical deficits. Behavioral responses typically increase with exposure in a fairly uniform manner, indicating a more general response. The pattern of results, comparable to findings previously reported among subjects with high urinary mercury concentrations, meaning greater than 50 micrograms per liter of urine, presents convincing evidence of adverse behavioral effects, according to all the studies, when a person is exposed, meaning a dentist or their assistants, to very low levels. A 1992 study revealed evidence of reduced fertility among dental assistants who work with mercury. Women who prepared 30 or more amalgams per week and had 3 or more poor mercury hygiene factors were 50% less likely to conceive during a given menstrual cycle than unexposed women. Dr. Douglas J. Phillips, a dentist practicing biological dentistry in Palm Beach, Florida, describes his own struggle with mercury amalgam-related illness as follows. He told me, I started my own practice in 1970 in Palm Beach, and I decided about 2 months later not to work with amalgam, not to put any amalgams in, because I knew there was something I didn't like about it. During those times, we didn't wear gloves or masks, and I drilled out a lot of amalgam's fillings, and I breathed it as I was drilling it out of someone's mouth. And I was taking vitamins and minerals and chelating agent. I thought that I was well covered. I thought that it was bouncing off of me. Then in the early 90s, I wasn't well at all. And I found out that in spite of all the things that I had done for my health, the vitamins, minerals, juicing, I was extremely mercury toxic. Not from the mercury fillings I put into people's mouths, simply from the mercury I took out of their mouths. Dr. Williamson of the Toxic Studies Institute sums it up this way. He says, if you pull up the carpets in a dental office, it's just bloated with mercury. When you see a 52-year-old dentist whose memory is in the 15th percentile, something's wrong there. Let's take a look at the effects of mercury on your kidney function. And the reason I'm doing this so detailed is because you've heard the arguments. There's no evidence. There's no proof that mercury does anything wrong. All hearsay, all nonsense. And I'm suggesting that is not the case. I'm suggesting that there is hard scientific evidence that mercury adversely affects every system in the body. In fact, last evening, in one of our final classes with a group that had just completed a year, a woman with Parkinson's disease got up and said that she had been asked to take the medication for Parkinson's, and in one of the support groups with a physician from Columbia Presbyterian who was the top investigator on this particular drug and who was there to answer people's questions, every single time she asked, well, what does this drug do? And how do we know it will work? And what are the side effects? Well, the side effects were tremors. And she said, well, if I'm taking it to overcome tremors, and if it causes tremors, then what's the benefit? The doctor couldn't answer. The doctor also could not give her anything specific as to how it worked, what specific parts of the brain it worked in, knew nothing about it, and finally had to admit it was completely experimental. In the interim, the woman decided to do something for herself. She started to cleanse and detoxify her system, and said that her energy has improved tremendously and that she has had some slowing down but not reversal of the situation. Then she said, but I didn't do everything I was supposed to do because I wanted to get some free dental work done, and I had 23 or 26 fillings, mercury silver fillings, put in her mouth this year. Hard to imagine anyone would do that, but that's what she did. And what's one of the side effects of mercury and methylmercury? Goes to the brain, can cause, you guessed it, Parkinson's disease. Now, does Michael J. Fox or Janet Reno or anyone else who is well known in the public, have they had their mercury taken out? Not at all. Are they loaded with mercury? I don't know. Probably, if they're the average person with the average type of dental fillings and all that's contributing. Would it make a difference? You bet. Will they get their mercury out? Never. Too orthodox. Even when people are not, as this person demonstrated last evening, loading themselves up with the very thing that could only make it worse. Well, hopefully now that person realizes there are safe ways, and not every dentist can take your mercury out. In fact, it can be worse if they take it out and they're not trained. There are holistic protocols as how to get the mercury out. Unfortunately, this dentist, Dr. Phillips, didn't know those protocols and was exposing himself to the mercury coming out of his patient's mouth. Let's look at the kidneys now. The impairment of kidney function from mercury amalgam may be even more severe than previously thought. According to another study by Drs. Vimy Lorchider and others. Again, the researchers placed amalgam in the teeth of sheep because weight and chewing mechanisms compare well with those of humans. Within 30 days, the sheep lost half of their kidney function. Now, this is with normal amalgam placement. And beyond that point, the functioning remained low. Meanwhile, the average amalgam lasts 10 years, allowing for extensive mercury exposure. It also affects our blood and bone cells, where our immune system is built. Preliminary studies at Colorado University indicated that blood and bone cells may be highly sensitive to mercury. Researchers found that mercury in a ratio of less than 40 parts per billion, which is very low, was lethal to white blood cells. Another study found that mercury concentrations of less than 0.4 parts per million killed bone cells. Yet it is estimated that at least 700 times more mercury than this amount rests in the gum tissue next to amalgam fillings. A laboratory study published in 2000 by the Biomaterials Unit at the School of Dentistry at the University of Birmingham in England gives further support to those findings. Mercury released from Titan, a mercury amalgam dental filling material, undermined the viability of primary peristeal and osteoblast cells in the culture. The cells were grown from the peritoneal bones of 2 to 3 day old albino Wistar rats and were exposed to the test materials for 1 to 6 days. The number of viable cells in each test group was determined, and the area of cell death around the test specimens were also measured. Mercury was the main element released from the dental amalgam, followed by copper and silver. The viability of cultures containing titan was significantly lower than cultures with a gallium-based alloy and the controls. A study of cytotoxicological effects on animal tissue concluded that levels of mercury and copper in amalgam silver filling materials makes them significantly more cytotoxic than either the two materials separately. And remember, mercury is always put in a combination. And so it's that combination that creates that deadly cocktail for people. Antibiotic resistance is a serious public health issue today. With the extensive use of antibiotics in modern medicine, some bacteria spontaneously undergo genetic alterations that makes them resistant to certain antibiotic drugs or classes of drugs. As a result, doctors have had to use higher doses of antibiotics, thus driving up the cost of treatment. Worse still, some antibiotics lose their effectiveness altogether, and doctors have a narrow choice of drugs to choose from in treating illness. In some cases, antibiotics fail altogether, and patients die. What does antibiotic resistance have to do with mercury amalgam? That is a question that no one ever asked until about 10 years ago. In her studies of antibiotic resistance, microbiologist Dr. Ann Summers had long been aware that there was a high degree of mercury resistance in human fecal bacteria. That meant that the bacteria in question had somehow been exposed to mercury and had developed resistance to the metal's toxic effects. This finding puzzled Summers. How had all these people been exposed to mercury? Summers refrained from publishing her findings because they made no sense based upon her current knowledge. Then in 1989, Summers came upon the pioneering work of doctors Lorchider and Vimy, showing that amalgam fillings implanted in sheep's molars released toxic mercury that could be tracked all over the animals' bodies. Summers began to suspect that the cause of the mercury-resistant fecal bacteria was the mercury in people's mouths. Soon after that, Summers teamed up with the Lorchider and Vimy at the University of Calgary to study the relationship among mercury amalgam, mercury resistance, and antibiotic resistance. Their groundbreaking 1993 study demonstrated that mercury released from amalgam fillings implanted in monkeys' teeth caused a significant increase in the resistance to mercury, along with an alarming increase in antibiotic resistance in the oral and intestinal bacteria of primates. The study also documents the results of Summers' earlier research on human fecal bacteria, showing that those with a high prevalence of mercury resistance intestinal bacteria were significantly more likely to have a resistance to two or more antibiotics. Scientists have known for some time that the genes that enable bacteria to resist the toxic effects of mercury are carried in the same DNA structures that carry the genes for antibiotic resistance. Summers and their colleagues have advanced scientific knowledge one step further. They have shown that once a bacterium is exposed to mercury, like the mercury in your teeth, and becomes mercury resistant, it is primed to become antibiotic resistant as well. Yet another instance in which mercury amalgam fillings threatens our health and well-being. Let me just boil that down to just basic lay language. Let's say that you are a 55-year-old, overly stressed male or female, and you have 10 amalgam fillings in your mouth, and you're going through a difficult time, and you're not eating the most perfect food. You're probably eating some sugar. Bacteria thrive on it. You're eating some meat. Bacteria thrive on it. It putrefies. Now you become a little ill, and your doctor recommends an antibiotic. Your body now, because of the mercury from your teeth leaching into that fecal material, making it antibiotic resistant, makes your body, in effect, antibiotic resistant. Antibiotics don't work. But what if you were a person who was sick in a hospital, you're recovering from surgery, there's a local infection post-surgical? Normally, without the mercury fillings in the mouth, you would have a body able to withstand such a an assault. Now you're putrefied and the antibiotic doesn't work. So we're talking about the consequences could be extremely serious, even deadly. Behind all this is the American Dental Association. Now let's look at that controversy. How great is the danger for mercury amalgam? That question stirs up hot debate between those who question its use and those who promote amalgam as a safe and effective compound. By conservative estimates, the average American has 10 fillings of three surfaces each piece. If each of these surfaces leaches one microgram of mercury per day, the generally accepted figure, then the average adult faces potential exposure to 30 micrograms of mercury a day from amalgam alone. The Food and Drug Administration cautions against any increase in the daily mercury exposure rate from food of 2 micrograms. The Toxic Element Research found estimate that people with 13 or more amalgams exceed the World Health Organization's daily mercury limit of 42 micrograms. Says the organization Toxic Element Research Foundation, quote, "The compelling fact about this data is that it does not include the mercury exposure received from all possible sources, just as the altogether different categories of food, air, and saliva," unquote. Other experts agree that even low doses of mercury exposure deserve careful investigation. Dr. Schwarzenruder of the University of Colorado says, "It is tempting to summarily conclude that such exposures result in no adverse effects since there's no readily identifiable general affliction associated with use of amalgam and stainless steel in dentistry. However, low-dose chronic exposure to any substance tends to have insidious and often highly complex sequelae, which may be multifactorial and interreactive. Also, recent innovative experiments demonstrate that low-dose mutagenicity is significantly greater than previously reported from amalgams." Despite these concerns, the American Dental Association claims that amalgam is unsafe only for the 1% of Americans that it estimates, purely an estimate, to be hypersensitive to mercury. While offering no proof of mercury safety whatsoever, the American Dental Association says, quote, "The continuous use of a dental amalgam as a restorative material does not pose a health hazard to the non-allergic patient," unquote. Gee, sounds kind of familiar. The tobacco industry, the asbestos industry, silicone breast industry, the DES industry, the pesticide industry, the artificial sweetener industry, the sugar industry, the cosmetic industries, the toxic removal industry, the military with depleted uranium. How many times have we been told, with some certainty from an authority agency or figure, that there's nothing to worry about, and we trust them, and then we find out we should have worried. We should have been more cautious. We should have been more diligent. They were not honest with us. If you've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall, and we're talking about the consequences of mercury upon our well-being. The results of other research, however, call the American Dental Association's estimate of mercury hypersensitivity into question. Studies cited by the Journal of the Massachusetts Dental Society indicate that the level of hypersensitivity is 10 times higher. One study of 1,538 people found 9.6% to be hypersensitive. Another study of 1,000 subjects put the number at 11.3%. Dr. Ziff's study cites two separate studies showing the prevalence of allergy to amalgam can be as high as 44%. One of the studies tested a population of dental students, yet these studies are conveniently overlooked in all the ADA publications and public statements. Amalgam restorations remain safe and effective, they say. Dentists should educate patients and other healthcare professionals who may be mistakenly concerned about amalgam safety, unquote, says a recent article in the Journal of the American Dental Association. And what if the American Dental Association's estimate were accurate? Even that 1% is 1,000 times greater than the level of exposure considered adequate grounds for recall in the auto industry. In one instance, says the Research Institute, more than 100,000 vehicles were recalled because of a single non-fatal injury caused by hazardous automobile material. In its staunch support of amalgam, the American Dental Association claims, quote, when mercury is combined with the metals used in dental amalgams, its toxic properties are made harmless, unquote. As a result, it says, quote, for most patients, dental amalgam remains a safe and effective material for filling cavities, unquote. But when it comes to the cold, hard, undisputable facts, the American Dental Association's defense of mercury stands on shaky grounds. The American Dental Association no longer maintains that amalgam safety has been scientifically proven, says the Academy, and it offers no certification of the safe and effective use of a mixed amalgam. In fact, the American Dental Association says amalgam cannot be certified because it is mixed with individual dentists who must take responsibility for the material safety. Indeed, in Tolhurst versus Johnson & Johnson, a California lawsuit in which a dental patient sued his dentist, two amalgam manufacturers and a distributor, and the American Dental Association itself, the ADA filed legal briefs making it clear that it has abdicated any responsibility for the damage done by mercury amalgams. The brief contains the following language, and I want to cite this. This is, quote, the ADA owes no legal duty of care to protect the public from allegedly dangerous products used by dentists. The American Dental Association did not manufacture, design, supply, or install the mercury containing amalgams. The American Dental Association does not control those who do. The American Dental Association's only alleged involvement was to provide information regarding its use. Dissemination of information relating to the practice of dentistry does not create a duty of care to protect the public from potential injury, unquote. Well, is the public aware of that? Is the public aware that the American Dental Association filed a legal brief that I have a copy of that says we owe no legal duty to care to protect the public from the alleged dangerous products, that they don't manufacture it, design it, supply it, or install it? So therefore, they're not responsible. But it's been the American Dental Association that has lobbied hard and successfully to make sure that any dentist who advertised the fact that these dental amalgams could be dangerous and suggested they be removed, that dentist could be removed from the practice of dentistry. That dentist could be sued by the state, have their practice completely closed down. So on the one hand, who but the American Dental Association is being the biggest single promoter of mercury fillings they have? Who has kept dentists from looking for alternatives? The American Dental Association. Who has attacked dentists for suggesting that there are safer alternatives? American Dental Association. Very disingenuous. Of course, they have lawyers to write that kind of language, but you could walk right through the transparency and duplicity of that legal argument. Apparently, we are expected to ignore the fact that the American Dental Association holds the patent on the high copper amalgam currently in use by most dentists. So let's go back to what they said in their legal brief. Quote, the ADA owes no legal duty of care to protect the public from allegedly dangerous products used by dentists. The ADA did not manufacture, design, supply, or install the mercury-containing amalgams. The ADA does not control those who do. Now, how does that owe up to the fact that they own the patent? That's right. The American Dental Association holds the patents on the high copper amalgam currently in use in most dentists. Well, if they say they didn't manufacture or design it, well, they created it, and you can't take their patent unless they get a royalty. So they did, in fact, allow the design, the supply, and the manufacture from those people who use their product. I suggest that that be re-examined in a court of law to see if they did not make an illegal statement. Also, that the American Dental Association is responsible for certifying all dental schools in the United States, and that the American Dental Association carries on a campaign of intimidation and harassment, like a bunch of bullies that they are, against cutting-edge dentists who use any product or procedure other than what they were taught in dental school. The American Dental Association relies heavily upon amalgam widespread use over the past 150 years as evidence of its safety. The organization suggests that, quote, the most convincing support we have for the safety of dental amalgam is the fact that each year more than 100 million amalgam fillings are placed in the U.S., unquote. Think of the rationale if we extended it. We have had racism for 100 years with so much of it practiced in the United States, it must be real or legitimate. It just boggles the mind. And since this rationale offers no comfort to those who question amalgam's use, quote, this is a chilling thought, says the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology in Calgary. It should be a cause of concern that approximately 72 million tons of mercury are used annually in dentistry, much of it being placed into the teeth of Americans. The American Dental Association also claimed that people are exposed to more mercury from fish than from dental amalgams. A statement says, quote, autopsies of people with fillings confirm that the amount of exposure to dietary mercury is approximately much less than that from dental amalgam mercury. Authorities in the field of metal toxicology have concluded that this chronic exposure from dental fillings makes the predominant contribution of human exposure to mercury, unquote. I would look at it differently. I would say if you're getting 30 micrograms from mercury fillings and 50 micrograms from fish, that's 80 micrograms. That's only 5,000 times more than what's considered safe, 500% higher than what's considered safe. So they shouldn't then look at that as if somehow that's a rationalization, that the mercury in the fillings are not bad. It even makes it worse. The American Dental Association's position may be best illustrated by its 1983 response to a study that measured mercury in the exposed air of humans. The ADA stated, quote, "We wish the public to be as certain as we are that dental amalgam is safe, and we will pursue this matter until that certainty is assured," unquote. Note the wording, "until that certainty is assured." A scientific study is not set out to assure any one point, but to conduct an open inquiry that not only recognizes new information, but follows that evidence wherever it may lead. In 1984, the American Dental Association did alter its position slightly to admit that mercury does indeed escape from amalgams, but it still maintained that the amounts in question were too small to cause any damage to the body. But the American Dental Association continues to deliver its flawed argument through the popular press. One recent Reader's Digest editorial, which was adapted from the American Dental Association News, reports that, quote, "About 0.7 nanograms of mercury in each gram of blood in people with silver fillings compared to 0.3 nanograms in those without fillings," unquote. Well, since the FDA considers 20 nanograms per gram of blood to be safe, says the editorial, quote, "researchers calculate that it would take 100 fillings to reach this level. To reach the lowest toxic level of mercury, a person would require 1,000 fillings," unquote. The article ends with the standard ADA conclusion, quote, "Silver fillings do not pose any health hazard to the non-allergenic patient." But, again, this argument conveniently overlooks some basic facts about how mercury is stored in the body. The logic is based upon the erroneous assumption that blood mercury levels for subacute exposures are indicative of actual mercury contamination. The fact that the blood mercury levels are not good indicators of total blood burden is well established in literature. It's no different than if you want to take an accurate level of your hormone. You wouldn't measure your blood for estrogen or testosterone. You'd measure your saliva. You'd find that there could be as much as a 15 times difference. 30 years ago, a study reported that mercury is rapidly cleared out of the blood after an intravenous injection. In 1972, researchers Freiberg and Volstels found that mercury concentrations in blood were, quote, "hardly suitable," unquote, in evaluating retention. In 1980, Dr. Phillips and Clarkson found that, quote, "a low mercury level in blood may falsely imply that significant mercury exposure has not occurred when, in fact, a dangerously high target tissue exposure may have existed," unquote. And while the ADA defends the use of mercury amalgam, the Environmental Protection Agency has defined it as a hazardous substance. On behalf of the EPA, the U.S. Justice Department brought a lawsuit in 1988 against a group of New England dentists and dental companies for damages caused by the faulty disposal of scrap amalgam. All parties involved eventually signed consent decrees that required them to reimburse the EPA a total of roughly $350,000 for its cleanup cost. According to a 1989 issue of the American Dental Association News, when the EPA was asked whether it considered dental amalgam to be a hazardous substance, it replied that, quote, "Any substance that contains a listed hazardous substance is itself a hazardous substance," unquote. Provided there is, quote, "a release or a threatened release," unquote, of a hazardous substance into the environment and where the government has incurred response cost. Well, in addition, the EPA sent a letter to one of the dental supply firms in 1988 that specifically refers to amalgam as a hazardous substance. In fact, the term, quote, "hazardous substance" shall have the same definition as that contained in Section 101, 14 of the CERCLA and includes scrap or waste dental amalgams and any mixture of such hazardous substances with any other substances, unquote. Well, that's a silver filling. So, the EPA deems your mouth a toxic dump site. Your teeth are toxic. All right? It's plain and simple. It's straight out. It's factual. In addition, the EPA sent a letter to one of the dental supply firms in 1988 that specifically told them this. Now, the Food and Drug Administration, for its part, has neatly skirted the issue of amalgam safety over the years. When 1976 legislation required the FDA to classify all medical and dental devices, The agency, quote, grandfathered its approval of the long-used amalgam fillings under the generally recognized as safe category. According to Joyce Taylor, dentist who founded the Environmental Dental Association, it spearheaded a movement for informed consent legislation concerning amalgam's use. Now, one decade later, in 1987, the FDA's classification of dental devices was published in the Federal Registry. Dental amalgam, meaning your silver filling, it turned out, was not even listed as a dental device based upon the rationale that amalgam is a reaction product. Instead, the FDA classified the components of amalgam, which means that amalgam itself has never been approved as a dental device. Says the Environmental Dental Association, quote, thus, amalgam has never, ever been subjected to the rigorous biocompatibility testing required of all other medical implant devices. In early 1991, the FDA clarified its position on mercury. And in so doing, it said that it could not be condemned based upon current evidence. It recommended that more studies on the subject be conducted. At the same time, the FDA's Dental Products Panel of the Medical Device Advisory Committee held a public hearing and again declared that the evidence against dental amalgams was not sufficient to prove its harm. This panel also said that amalgams should be researched further. Were they researched further? Not by the FDA and not by the American Dental Association. Then who by? What was done? Well, like a lot of things, nothing, just more of the same. The National Institutes of Health has taken the same stance on the amalgam issue. The National Institutes of Health mid-1991 conference said there is, quote, no scientific evidence that current used restorative materials cause significant side effects. Available data do not justify discontinuing the use of any currently available dental restorative material or recommending their replacement, unquote. Interestingly, however, the National Institutes of Health did recommend that dentists could, quote, reduce environmental contamination, unquote, by installing devices in their offices to recover waste amalgam residue from recycling. Now, let's put that into perspective. We know how highly political the FDA is. We also know how highly political the National Institutes of Health is. So on the one hand, publicly they're saying there's no scientific evidence that it's bad. Then they're telling dentists, you've got to reduce the environmental contamination of this amalgam by putting in special filters. Now, the EPA says it's a toxic material. So here we have the National Institute of Health agreeing that it's toxic because the environment which is put in is a toxic environment. Quote, reduced environmental contamination. Well, what do you make of reduced environmental contamination? When you're contaminating your environment, you're contaminating it with what? Amalgam. So you've got amalgam as a contaminant in your office. And doctors, dentists, in this case, higher suicide. The people working in dental office, higher miscarriages. More of all kinds of illnesses. Now, really, doesn't it come down to one thing, a liability? The American Dental Association's position on mercury carries considerable weight, since state dental boards operate as the long arm of the American Dental Association. Its philosophy trickles down to the local level. In fact, dentists who malign mercury as hazardous are threatened with expulsion from the American Dental Association in four states. And the dental leadership in several states threatens to censure dentists who inform patients that amalgam contains mercury. What's more, the American Dental Association systematically harasses dentists who place alternative fillings. Those who remove amalgams, even at the patient's request, may face blacklisting in the dental business communities. In states that require dentists to have liability insurance, the dental boards can exert some influence on the insurers, perpetuating the myth that it's dangerous to remove amalgams. If an insurance company then cancels a dentist's policy, the state dental board may suspend his or her license for failing to maintain insurance. The attempts at censorship continue to this day. A case in point, in the 1990s, the Washington Dental Disciplinary Board proposed legislation that would make it unethical for dentists to replace, quote, clinically serviceable amalgam fillings for health purposes. reports the Environmental Dental Association. The proposal, which would have made replacement work a punishable offense, did not pass at that time. Several months later, the board dropped its final proposal to regulate amalgam replacement. This move followed the demand of anti-amalgam advocates that two of their experts be allowed to testify. As a result, the board withdrew its previous statement that the safety of amalgam had been scientifically proven. Had the proposal passed, it would have required dentists to inform patients of the scientific differences of opinion regarding amalgam before removing cervical fillings. The board dropped this idea when it realized that dentists would have to inform patients of the same schism before they place fillings. The ADA also vehemently opposes any legislation that seeks to inform patients of dental amalgam's contents. This position, not unlike the tobacco industry's keeping super secret the formulations of their cigarette, of course appears to contradict this argument that amalgam does not cause harm. Hey, friends, if it doesn't cause harm, why be secret about it? But the ADA has managed either to lessen the impact of informed consent legislation at the state levels, such as Alaska's 1989 initiative to inform patients the content of various dental fillings, or to defeat it entirely. The end result is that dental patients remain ignorant of amalgam's contents and do not have a choice of using alternative materials. In New Mexico, for example, such legislation was voted down by the very committee that had unanimously passed the same legislation 1 week earlier. According to the Environmental Dental Association, and in Illinois, the House of Representatives passed a right-to-know informed consent resolution in 1991 that eventually backfired. The resolution directed the State Department of Health to examine the amalgam issue and report its findings to the General Assembly. The position paper resulting from this directive took the ADA's position that mercury dental amalgams are safe. As recently as early 1992, however, one state offered a ray of hope in getting legislation on the books. The California State Assembly became the first to pass an informed consent bill that requires dentists to tell patients about mercury exposure before placing fillings. Although the bill, Senate Bill 934, awaits final approval, says the Environmental Dental Association, quote, it represents a significant victory in the process to provide dental patients with their due rights. Now, there are several other issues here. What I'd like to do at this time, though, is I would like to bring onto the program, other than completing with a commentary, an individual who is trying to make some changes to at least the laws in New York State. He is Assemblyman Richard Brodsky. And he's sponsoring a bill in New York Senate. It's called A4209 to restrict the use of mercury amalgam by dentists. So let's go over and say hello to Richard Brodsky. Richard Brodsky. Richard? Okay, we're going to put you right on the air. All right, but we can hear you, so please hold on. All right. He's a legislator. They don't always listen, but they can certainly speak.
Do it that way.
It's nice to have you. Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
All right. Originally, this bill was designed to restrict the use of mercury amalgam by dentists. It was meant to protect the environment by curtailing the way that mercury is disposed of in the environment. But as you research mercury, you found that there is actually no scientific basis for the use of it in fillings. Thus, the bill evolved into what it is today. Would you explain to our audience exactly, if passed, what this bill will accomplish?
Well, the bill goes well beyond mercury in dental offices. It deals with mercury in consumer products. It deals with mercury in sewage. It deals with mercury across the spectrum as it quite insidiously infiltrates itself into the public body in every sense of that word. With respect to dentists,
There are two constructs.
One is that it bans the use for certain populations and requires informed consent for the others. And the second construct is that it would merely require informed consent for every population. We're wrestling with how to work that out right now.
Okay. I'm getting some feedback. Do you have a radio on?
Yes, that was the only way I could hear you.
Please turn the radio off.
Okay. I turned it down and I can't hear you.
Okay. Just tell us
now
what
I'm
you...
Now I'm turning it back up. right. And I can't.
Okay.
So you tell me what you want to do.
Okay, I'll give you the question, and you can turn the radio down and answer it, all right?
Great.
In fact, I'll give you a couple questions so we don't get the feedback. What is the likelihood that your bill will pass? What kind of opposition does it face? Why is it important for people to contact their local representatives? And again, this is in New York, but it certainly can be used as a model bill for other states. We're heard all over the United States. And it's aimed, from what I understand, at protecting people from mercury use in fillings by requiring informed consent before mercury fillings are used, prohibiting pregnant women and children from getting mercury fillings, which, by the way, is all already done in Sweden, prohibiting health insurers from discriminating against coverage of persons choosing to have dental fillings that are not do not contain mercury. So tell us all this, plus where in the New York, where does it stand? And, of course, we got the New York State Dental Association, a large, powerful organization, which launched an attack against the bill by claiming that it's unwarranted. There's no scientific basis for discrimination against the use of the bill. So give us the high and low in all these points.
Okay. The bill is now in committee and is being looked at by the members quite thoroughly. It is clearly being opposed by the Dental Association. And their position is that there's no scientific evidence to require anything to be done on amalgam. We have a variety of studies from around the world that completely contradict that, and we are making that case. I think the evidence is so strong that, in the end, we will be very persuasive on the merits. On the politics, there's a legitimate place for that in democratic institutions, and we are working as best we can with our friends in the state Senate, which is a Republican majority, and the state Assembly, which I serve, which is a Democratic majority, to move the bill forward. I think it's undecided, but I do think that people who care should reach.
I'm sorry. I think we lost a connection there. Well, let me just give you what I can on it for the people listening. I'll just give you the highs of it from here. Assemblyman Richard Brodsky is sponsoring a bill in New York State. It's Assembly Bill 4209. Write that down, 4209. It will restrict the use of mercury amalgam by dentists. He is having it fought, of course, and we could expect that from the American Dental Association's New York Division, the New York State Dental Association. He wants to protect your rights. This bill will do so, and that's important. So I think he's calling in on our newsmaker line. Sorry, we got disconnected there. Okay, hold on 1 second. Let me put him back up here. We'll get him up here. All right, you're back on the air.
And I can hear you. This is much more pleasant.
All right.
Sorry for the inconvenience. At any rate, I was listening to the show as you were just talking, and I think the point I'd like to make is that state government is a very flexible and open process. Members do respond to concerns from people who give them a call. And if your listeners do want to help move this thing forward in New York, they should reach out. My office would be glad to help them identify who their assembly member or senator would be. My phone number is 914-345-0432. We are being lobbied very heavily by dentists. I think that's their perfect right. I think they're surprised when I talk about the peer-reviewed and published studies we have about the problem. I think momentum is with us, but I don't think it's a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination.
Are you familiar with the white paper that I've just put up on my webpage called Toxic Teeth, the exploration of the controversy surrounding amalgam fillings?
Yes, and we are, to a certain extent, aware of what's been happening at the FDA and other places as we go through this. But as I mentioned earlier, the bill is retracting a variety of opposition because it uses it deals with mercury in the consumer stream across the board. For example, medical instruments. For example, plumbing instruments, thermometers. To a certain degree, cosmetics. All of which contain mercury, are the subject of the bill. So we're fighting this fight on many different fronts.
Well, I would ask the people in this audience to realize that when someone takes the challenge to protect the American consumer against vested interests that are very well financed, have PR firms, that we support that effort. And I would encourage people in this audience to contact Assemblyman Richard Brodsky's office. And let me give you some numbers. What you can do, you can contact your local assembly and Senate members and tell them that there is a scientific basis for this bill. So they must support the bill. To find out the phone number for your local assembly office, call 518-455-4100. 518-455-4100. Or you can visit on the website www.assembly.state.ny.us. To find out the number of your local Senate office, call 518-455-2800. Again, for your Senate office, 518-455-2800. Why? Because so far your local Senate assemblymen have only heard from conventional dentists who oppose the bill. They need to hear from people like yourself who will support this bill. As I told my class last night, and I was talking on this issue, we've only had a handful as a percentage of the population of Americans who have fought on important issues. But I asked them, I said, if we hadn't have fought, you would still have MSG in baby food. You would still have DDT on your food. You would still have Agent Orange, and we wouldn't have had any rights sought for the GIs who fought in Vietnam who were exposed to the defoliant. You would still have the red number 4 dye. I don't think people appreciate how many different major fights there have been. But everyone is exposed to silver mercury fillings. So it crosses all boundaries, ethnic, religious, economic, educational. Everyone has got those mercuries, from the richest to the poorest. So we're all concerned. If the dentist is only going to tell you what they know. Unfortunately, what they know is what they've been led to believe. And they have not done their homework. I have taken over 2.5 years of intensive research to review the entire world literature, to look to do over 100 interviews, and to have qualified peer review studies. In this white paper called Toxic Teeth, the Mercury Dental Amalgam, Analyzing the Debate, which is on my webpage, there for you to use, I have over 214 citations. These are qualified citations. Therefore, they are usable. You can trust them. They have been verified and re-verified. Because I realize that when you're doing legal actions, you're making public presentations, you have a responsibility to present information that can really challenge the American Dental Association that does not have this kind of information. If I tell you mercury is dangerous, I give you the citations. I give you the doctors, the scientists, the journals. If they say it's safe, let them prove its safety. They can't. They can only give opinions and be very disingenuous because there's a legal action that could occur. Probably the largest single class action in history would hit the Dental Association for knowingly contributing to our ill health. So we have a chance in New York and then with New Jersey. You can pick up the same legislation and use it as a model bill there in California, in Washington, and all the other places we're heard. So contact your local assembly person, senator. I've given you the numbers. In New York State, it's 518-455-4100. And in the Senate, 518-455-2800. At least you'll know who your legislators are. And it's Assembly Bill 4209. That's 4209, sponsored by Assemblyman Richard Brodsky. Or you can contact his number direct. That number again, please.
That number is 914-345-0432, and we'll be glad to help people identify who their assemblyman or senator is, and the actual bill number is A575.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was 4209?
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm wrong. I was giving you the Senate number. 4209. You're correct.
4209 is the assembly
number.
Okay.
That's correct.
So we want to see if we can't pull this audience who cares about getting the right materials in their mouth, the wrong materials out, and having the right to make that choice, informed consent, and to have some protections. And anyone who cares about this should call and make that effort. I want to thank you very much for supporting this legislation, and we will certainly do what we can to support the consumer's effort to have not just the dentist and dental association and the manufacturers pigeonholing the legislators, but the American public also giving their voice.
Thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
All right. And that is Assemblyman Richard Brodsky. And again, if you go to my webpage, www.garynull.com, G-A-R-Y-N-U-L-L, look under issues, because every major public issue is on my webpage. We had, 2 million visitors last month. So we have a lot of people going there to get these issues because we try to have an ongoing, very scholarly, very professional series of research. Now, I was not able to finish our paper today. We will do one more completed. The program Toxic Teeth will have one more, which will be number 4, because I still have to give you some really interesting stories about some dentists who I've interviewed who are looking at what has happened to them because of this. And then I want to give you some specific citations. So I'll complete this on tomorrow's program. And just a few program announcements before we take off today. This Sunday evening, please be aware that I have 2 radio shows, 1 hour each. The 8 o'clock show is on WNEW 102.7. That's at 8 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, I will be on WEVD 1050 AM on the dial. So there's 2 hours, lots of information, tons of information, and I hope that you have a chance to listen. Also, we are beginning to get people from all over the United States calling, psychiatrists and lawyers and activists who are coming to the big protest that we're having against forced psychiatric procedures. And that's going to be on May 21st at noon at 120 Broadway in Lower Manhattan, Attorney General Spritzer's headquarters. And I will have a white paper at that time. And I will have tons of scientific documents. And we will have a law that we will have, or I should say the legislative basis of a law. And we are doing all that we can behind the scenes now to make this happen. And so come and join us in protesting what goes on behind closed doors with impunity to people who become victims. And we have to stop that. And finally, for all of you who have had or have hepatitis, herpes, Epstein-Barr virus, cytomegalovirus, we are setting up a new study through the Metropolitan Wellness Group to actually have hard scientific data with a real protocol. Up until this point, you have no idea how frustrating it's been trying to get doctors. I've had people who have gone to through me. The patient gets well, overcomes their herpes, overcomes their hepatitis, and they will never give me back the materials. So I can't do it as a study, and I could have published this in Journal of American Medical Association. This could have been made breakthrough medicine and medical news. Now we can do it. Finally, finally, finally. We've got a place that no matter what disease, there's a way to get help, and we can document it. It's the Metropolitan Wellness Group, and they're at 252-1942, 252-1942. See you tomorrow.